Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath, Debbie Brook, with Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Hi, this is Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community. We are live with Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim today, and it's been a short vacation break, and we're just waiting for him to call in line. He has a number of questions from callers and listeners to the archives, and we're going to be hearing his answers to those questions, plus continuing our study of Kent's repertory in the rubrics for the chest. And we're welcoming Dr. Adil now. He is
Hi.
On the line. Hi, and we have, I'm going to make sure that I open the chat room for anybody who wants to come in and put their comments and questions. We appreciate it so much when people share the news and the educational benefits that we have to provide by putting the link, clicking the Twitter button or the Facebook, putting it on LinkedIn, putting it in the social networks like Dig and StumbleUpon, anywhere you can. Let other people know the opportunities that are available right here for free, educational broadcasting, Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. And I'm excited to talk to you about everything that's been happening in your life and what we can do to care for ourselves or contact a professional.
So I welcome all the audience and the listeners. It is a long gap and we are back again. The ball is rolling. And I wish all our Muslim friends a very happy Ramzan, and plus every other person, good Olympic viewing.
Now, when we do a fast, we always wish the person an easy fast. Is that something that you say also?
Well, the fasting is not so easy because you have to stay not only hungry, you can't even drink water, a sip of water. And
yes.
Moreover, even saliva you can't ingest.
You can't
spit it out.
You have to spit out your saliva?
Yeah.
I never heard of that. Okay, that's new. That's new to me.
Muslims, many Muslims do follow this also. So it's as strict as a fast, and it has to be done right from age 5 to 7 years, children to adults, whosoever can do. They all are doing fasting for throughout the world. So happy Ramadan.
Okay, I'm wishing everyone a happy Ramadan. And I'm going to say an easy fast because it's, you know, when the time goes and you're in a state of spirituality, that's where your focus is. And then you don't mind so much and focus on the food.
Exactly. It's not only the spiritual cleansing, but it's also an increase of willpower. It is also an abeyance. And a lot, many things are attached to fasting, as it is with all other fasting in all other religions. So also is with this. And it really tests you and how much humbleness, how much simplicity. Because it is not only fasting that is not eating. It is also, you can't speak lies. You have to watch your character. You have to watch your every move. It's that, that is called Roza. Even if you speak lies, your Roza is broken. So everything, every matter, every act in this month matters. And it is hoped that once a person does roza in the month of Ramadan, he carries the same thing. At least the fasting goes off, but then fasting, as far as character deviation is concerned, that should be followed. The acts and the character building up and the personality building up, that should continue in all the other 11 months, apart from the Ramadan month.
So is this fasting, can tell me how many days is this fasting process?
30 days. If you miss a fast, for example, for 2 days, you can continue in the next month also. There are times when during traveling or some for other reasons, you may miss a fast, but then that can be continued and done in the very next month. So many people do that. Many people continue for 2 months, Ramzan and Shaban, the next month. So people can do fasting for 2 months. But most important, other than fasting, only for food, it is also the mental food. What you take in and what you produce out, that is very important. You need to have a spiritual cleansing, the mental cleansing, and purity of the heart is most important. Other than that, only simple fasting of food, does not serve the purpose of Ramadan.
Very good. And I want to just mention that Dr. Waqar Ali Khan on Homeopathy World Community on August 3rd posted a little blog called Fasting, Detoxifying Your Body, Mind, and Soul. So if anybody wants to look at his thoughts on that, we have it on the network. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and think positive thoughts and start learning with you today.
Well, the past month has been a wonderful month because I have gone to 2-3 places. One of the important places which I had visited was I was invited by the government of Assam, Ministry of Ayush, that is Alternative Health Sciences stream, government of Assam. And they have started an initiative, first, I think, in India, wherein the government doctors working under the Ayush sector, they are compulsorily asked to conduct labor and pregnancies only with homeopathic medicines. Till now, they used to refer patients to their allopathic colleagues, but now the government has made it mandatory. So throughout India, we were selected, my mother and myself. She is a gynecologist. Of course, I was just accompanying her. And 3 days, we had to train about 150 doctors and nurses as well, because in very remote parts of those hilly areas of Assam, where initially we had a flood-like situation, and every year we keep on having floods. In such situations, we don't even have doctors. So nurses also need to be trained regarding the use of homeopathy in pregnancy as well as labor. We had taken lots of videos displaying the various effects of homeopathic medicines for easing labor pains, for cervical dilatation, for complications of labor like postpartum hemorrhage and embolism and many other, and during pregnancy we have constipation, anxiety, insomnia and urinary tract infections, all those things. How do you deal with homeopathy? Which medicines to select? How do you select? How do you give? When to stop? Which potency? Smallest of small things were discussed in great depth. We started at morning 8:30, quarter to 9, and ended up at 6 o'clock in the evening, and really had a good time with all those. Even vaccinations and homeopathy during pregnancy was considered, because homeopaths cannot give allopathic vaccinations by rule. So we had asked them, we had told them what to do in this place. So it all in all, a very, very productive, a soul-satisfying workshop we had. And tomorrow again, Dr. Kasim, my father, is proceeding to Karnataka for another lengthy workshop on case-taking and understanding the case. He will also be speaking upon the same thing, that is pregnancy and labor. So again, he would have another week of wonderful workshop in Dharwad and Bangalore, the two cities of Karnataka. So with this, we now start. I have got, before starting the repertory proper, I was discussing with Debbie just before the interview, how glad, how delighted it is, I feel when people ask me questions, so that it is not a simple monologue, it becomes a dialogue. And various people, apart from our subject, which is basically cardiology and homeopathy, fine, but it's just a show and we can discuss everything. And I have got so many questions, at least I've got 7 questions to answer as of now, which I'll be taking one by one. And we'll be trying to discuss what we can do about those queries which you have put forth. And I thank my audience day in and day out. Some people ask me directly by mail or by phone. So I'm thankful so that by this show, we can actually propagate homeopathy, and someday it will see the light of the day, which it's supposed to see in its truest sense.
Right. So we must inform those who are listening. This is a study session. It's educational. And we are not prescribing for anybody right now. If you need to have a case taken, then you need to contact a homeopath or your healthcare provider.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the first question has been asked by Dr. Mrs. Monica Singh. She is from New Delhi. And she says, Dr. Adil, I have been practicing homeopathy since past 14 to 15 years. And I would like to ask you, what is the difference between similimum and true similimum, and also between a similar and the most similar remedy? Well, Dr. Monica, a very good question. And after Master Hahnemann discovered the concept of chronic miasms, he qualified this term similimum to true similimum. He said that a similimum is the most appropriate homeopathically indicated remedy. I repeat, a similimum is the most appropriate homeopathically indicated remedy selected on the law of similars. So this is the definition of similimum according to Hahnemann. But a true similimum is a similimum which takes into account the basic characteristics, expressions of inherited miasmatic complex into consideration. That means a true similimum is prescribed on the miasmatic basis of, or the miasm the patient is suffering from, and not the disease proper, not only on the symptomatology, the presenting disease scenario. No, the true similimum is present is a similimum which takes into account the basic characteristics, expressions of the inherited miasmatic complex into consideration. I remember in a treatise on chronic miasm, Dr. T.F. Allen, he adds that the similimum alleviates the presenting altered totality, but a true similimum will tackle the miasmatic state, which is the cause for the causes, thereby preventing relapses and initiating the curative process. So to make things simpler, or this is a quite a technical answer because it's a quite technical question, I believe. After you give a similimum, for example, a patient comes to you and he is aged 23 years and he has been complaining of joint pains, recurrent joint pains. So today he has come to you with pain in the shoulder, left shoulder, which is radiating to the left arm, and it is aggravated by damp, wet weather. And if you have selected a remedy on this symptom scenario, which, for example, say it's a rhododendron or dulcamara, and if you have administered dulcamara 200 and the patient says, I am relieved, so this is a similimum. But suppose now if you take the entire history of the patient, for example, his family history, that his grandfather suffered from malignancy, his grandmother suffered from diabetes, parents, one has got arthritis, the other is healthy, siblings, one has got hypothyroidism, etc., etc. So family history, then past history, and his physical and mental genitals, how his mental state is evolved, how is he nature-wise, how is his temperament. Taking all these into consideration, if you select a remedy, then that is called the true similimum for this patient. So once you administer the true similimum, or what we call as constitutional remedy, only then the relapses of this arthritis in that patient will occur. Otherwise, that dulcamara was a similimum for that point of time, but then after some time, again the patient may come with some other type of arthritis, and another remedy, for example, pulsatilla would be selected. So similimum and true similimum, this is the difference. I hope I could convince you with this answer. The next question.
I'm taking it all in and listening to. Now, what if you give dulcamara? It is a, would you say, partial similimum or an acute similimum.
No, it's, yeah, yeah, exactly. It's an acute similimum. It's only a similimum. It's not. We don't call it acute similimum. You have taken the totality of the presenting totality into consideration. The presenting totality of symptoms. For example, pain, left shoulder joint, pain radiating to the left arm, aggravated by damp wet weather, etc., etc. So that was presenting symptomatology. You did not take into account the nature of the patient or the temperament of the patient or the physical generality. He's a hot patient or a chilly patient. That was not required. So, yes, you can call similimum as an acute similimum or simply similimum, which is selected on the presenting totality. So that solves your temporary problem.
Right. But so if they need an immediate relief, and then you could use that and then move on to the deeper acting one?
Yeah, you have to. As a homeopath, so there are two types of simulimum. First is presenting symptom, and then the basic characteristic, which are basically unchanged. They are the patient's characteristic. For example, color of the hair, or the body structure, or the thermals, or the thirst, or stools, or sexual appetite, and menses. All these are basic characteristics, and they don't alter in a patient generally.
Okay.
So, presenting symptomatology changes. So, both are prescribed in the law of similars. The basic characteristic also, as well as this presenting totality, both are similars. So, law of similar is true for both of them. But a true similimum and a similimum, they are different. And a good homeopath would always follow up a similimum with a true similimum so that relapses don't occur.
Okay, so we can just do follow-up with the true similimum. And all of those basic characteristics which are the person carries with them throughout life, what they look like and their body type and all of these and their family history, that is what composes the miasm?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay.
So what essentially a constitutional medicine, what you give is basically an anti-miasmatic remedy, a deep-acting anti-miasmatic remedy, and it is the medicine for that person. It also vaccinates. It's also a medicine for vaccination, which will prevent further relapses and development of any other further disorders for that patient.
When you say it is a remedy for vaccination, you mean it acts as an immune booster for the individual, or it removes the side effects for somebody who has had vaccination?
No. It acts as an immune booster for that person.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that.
The second question is from Sister Cecilia from Newcastle upon Tyne. She says, Dr. Adil, I am a lay homeopath practicing since many years in UK. I wish to ask as to which is the best repertory, Dr. Ken's repertory, Robin Murphy's repertory, synthetic repertory, synthesis. Even Dr. Ken's repertory is available in different formats. So please advise which to follow. Well, I'm so happy that, Sister Cecilia is following us on our Blog Talk radios. So that, and she's asked a very relevant question because we are studying Ken's repertory. So, well, sister, there are a number of repertories in the market. So every repertory has its own significance, own scope and limitations. So out of the four you have mentioned, remember only Dr. Kent's repertory is an original compilation by Dr. Kent himself. And you can refer this to preface to third edition. In the third edition, there's a preface and there it's written. So it's an original compilation by Dr. Kent himself. And the rest are computerized compilations from a number of sources. Some of them are unheard of. But because repertory is basically a dictionary, its clinical value is only suggestive. So for final selection of the drug, one must go to the Materia Medica. Hence, my advice is that you should first start with Ken's repertory and go on upgrading it from other reliable sources. The rest of the repertories must be used as reference books only if Ken's repertory does not oblige. Mind you, the best repertory is the one which you make by yourself. For example, if you take a Ken's book, study each rubric. Suppose you don't understand the rubric, you can refer to other repertories, add the certain drugs. Certain drugs are not given in Ken's repertory, they may be given other repertories for that same rubric. You can add them and complete your own dictionary, your own repertory, your own book. That is the best repertory for that individual practitioner. Ultimately, we need to use repertory and the book should be usable. We have to be comfortable with our book. And Ken's repertory, for us at least, majority of Indians and in clinical practitioners here, Ken's repertory is the most comfortable and It blends both the old as well as newer clinical scenarios which we are practicing day in and day out.
How does it add the old and the new in the Kents, because we know where it's from, it's an old book,
but it has got lots of newer wider applications. You remember last time we had discussed about embolism, bubbles,
yes,
in the arteries,
okay,
the same chest. Now bubble starts from the heart and passes through the arteries, natrum phosphor the drug, on page number 824. So now this although the language seems to be old, but it's very much applicable, clinically applicable now.
Okay.
There's a rubric in extremities, phlegmasia alba dolans. Phlegmasia alba dolans, or milk leg. Now, milk leg is a very old terminology for elephantiasis or filariasis. Filaria is very common in third world countries. It's due to a mosquito, Wuchereria bancrofti, the parasite. And it causes blockage of the lymphatic system. And once the lymphatic system is blocked, the extremities swells. And that is swelling is called as phlegmasia alba dolans. Alba means white, dolans mean painful, and phlegmasia means because of blocked lymphatic channels. So, and this is we very commonly find in developing countries like India, Pakistan, Nepal, and Sri Lanka, and Malaysia and all. So, again, it's very relevant. So they're very relevant in clinical conditions now, but old terminologies are there.
And what was the remedies under there? Were there more than one?
Yeah, there are more than one. I don't remember. I just remember
okay.
the rubric name.
You remember the rubric. Okay.
One remedy I remember is Cedron, for sure.
Right, okay.
So,
okay.
Well, the third question is from Dr. Irfan Sadiq from Faisalabad, Pakistan. He says, "Sir, in homeopathy, is it possible to cure each and every patient, like cancer patients, even if they come in terminal stages?" Dr. Irfan, it will be absolutely wrong for any physician to claim to cure. See, when I use the word cure, I am using Hanumanian cure. I am not using the cure in terms of palliation. So it will be absolutely wrong for any physician to claim to cure each and every case who comes to him or her. Every system, including homeopathy, has its own scope and limitations. Homeopathy can cure only true natural diseases. I would ask you, Dr. Sadiq, to refer to aphorism number 76 and 74, wherein Hanuman has clearly written, only for natural diseases has the beneficent deity granted us in homeopathy the tools to cure. So, please refer to aphorism number 76 and 74, and you will understand that every system has scope and limitations. Homeopathy can cure only true natural cases. So unfortunately, these group of patients are fast dwindling. Today, majority of cases belong to complex category, multi-miasmatic, drug miasmatic, and even times iatrogenic, that is created by medicaments. So quite a few are one-sided cases. For example, they may have a grave disease, indwelling grave disease, but they don't have manifest symptoms. So if you don't have symptoms, you just can't cure in homeopathy with the help of pathological diagnosis. That's very difficult. That's not possible. You can palliate but not cure. So you need to have certain symptoms. So one-sided disease is basically very difficult to cure. All those in whom gross irreversible structural changes have taken place cannot be cured. If you have a huge mass, a huge malignancy, and it's bleeding, you can actually only stop the bleeding or at the times control the inflammation. But the huge mass cannot be just simply dropped off with homeopathic drugs. We can palliate the distinct symptoms of the disease or its effects. So on the whole, senior homeopaths of 15 or 20 years of standing get only 30 to 40% of the cases in the curable stage. Majority of the patients come in late stages after all of the therapies have failed. And that is the reason why we say that homeopathy cannot be used for curing all and all patients. Yes, cases have to be managed. Palliation can be done. But cure, we have to assess whether the patient is a natural case, still in a curable functional state, or far advanced pathological state cannot be cured. So don't claim to do that.
That's, I think, maybe a person would ask that question because they have heard stories of some people who say that that has worked for them, even with pathology. And
see,
go ahead.
I agree, but such cases cannot be generalized. See, every single
right.
practitioner, including myself, I've got a lot of cases which were dumped by other physicians as incurable cases.
Mm-hmm.
But still, they were within purview of homeopathy to be cured. I could not have dumped them as incurable just because other physician had done so. But still, I would not claim there are various types of pathology, and the advanced pathology, the word which we use, that is highly individualized. So if it's a functional disease, if it's a miasmatic disease, if still the vital force is solid enough to take the onslaught of the medicinal action, then we may hope for a cure. But that's not possible in all cases. Only natural cases where you have good physical generals, good mental generals, and then you can have a pathology which is amenable to cure. So then you don't find such cases. These patients don't directly come to you. They come after going to all other therapies. They go to allopathy. Once allopathy has given up, then they would go to other system. They then, if the other system fails, finally, if they have heard from somewhere that homeopathy is last resort, please go to homeopathy. So at least I, as a physician, and we working here, find such patients, a lot of these patients, coming, going to all other people, and then coming to us last. So if such patients come to us, even if we would have cured them in early stages, but because they have come in a terminal stage, we can't offer them cure. We can definitely offer them palliation.
Right. But you do have many of your patients coming to you regularly from their general as their general practitioner or only as a specialist?
No, no. Many patients do come to us as general practitioner because we have been, I am the fourth generation. So we have been having a practice of, say, 104 years. So many people know us and they would come directly. So our case is different, but then it cannot be generalized for all physicians, all homeopaths around the world.
But this, because of your lifelong experience and the generations of experience, this is where you can state that persons can be cured or not exhibit their symptoms of disease from the time they're growing. You can take care of what you were talking to me about, caring for a person through obstetrics, through birth, from birth until the end of life.
Yeah, exactly. But the word cure, suppose from this stage, if I tell that all cases or majority of cases are curable, then it would give a wrong message. That is totally an assessment of the homeopath and the patient. How much pathology the patient has come in, how late in the stage of the disease the patient has come in. Secondly, the competency of the physician himself or herself. How competent one is. How much the original symptoms or the basic characteristic of the patient are still remaining. How much are they altered by the pathology. All these need to be assessed, and then can you say that such cases can be cured or palliated or nothing can be done at all. All these three situations can hold. Sometimes you can't do anything about the patient, even with homeopathy. So homeopathy is not everything. It's not omnipotent. It's not always you can do. You can always try to do. You can try to palliate. If yes, permissible. If the patient permits, then cure. So I strictly say, not all cases are curable. Only those cases which fit into aphorism number 76, natural cases. And now what natural cases is, it's another chapter by themselves. Itself. So
okay, we'll do natural chapters next week.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So keep going with. Did you finish this question number three?
Yeah. We finished.
Okay.
So at the end, I would ask Dr. Irfan a very good question, but no, do not. Unfortunately, many, in spite of knowing this, many homeopaths, at least in India, make tall claims of curing even genetic disorders and even terminal stages of cancer. That's a sad thing. So just to earn wrong name, fame, you just can't keep on telling any and everything. You have to assess. It has to be an individual assessment and clinical in a judgment of the physician. The next question is, Dear Dr. Adil, I am a software consultant in one of the companies at Santa Clara, USA. I also have a great interest in homeopathy and keep reading homeopathic literature off and on. I have even read a book authored by you, Textbook of Miasms. I also hear your blog talks avidly. I am suffering from a neurological disorder, multiple sclerosis. Does homeopathy have anything to offer me? Mr. Kamlesh Raghuvanshi from Santa Clara, USA. Well, he seems to be an Indian residing in Santa Clara. So at the outset, I'm delighted, Mr. Kamlesh, to hear that you are an avid homeopath. Degree or not, it hardly matters. Also, I'm very happy that you have read the Textbook of Miasms. Let me tell you that this concept of miasm is even difficult for a homeopath to understand. And you as a layperson reading it, hats off to you. About multiple sclerosis, as you must be very well aware, that it's a degenerative and a demyelinating disease of the central nervous system. And the basic pathology is multiple plaque formations in the spinal cord and the white matter of the cerebral cortex. Clinically, as you would have experienced it, it expresses in the form of periodic remissions and relapses with a progressive downhill course with each relapse. Traditional methods of treatment can manage such cases. Allopathy has got only immunosuppressive drugs, which can have their own side effects and which do have their own side effects. And in India, luckily, multiple sclerosis is very, very less. But in US and UK and other European countries, even in Australia, the ratio is very high. But still in India, the immunosuppressive therapy is very, very costly for those patients having multiple sclerosis. No doubt the exacerbations can be effectively controlled, but the passage of time, these drugs also do not oblige. The allopathic drugs, the immunosuppressive drugs also fail to oblige over a period of time. And this is very well known to all MS patients. Since you have been studying my textbook of miasms, so miasmatically these diseases are an expression of tubercular miasm, what we call as psychosyphilitic complex. Psychotic miasm and syphilitic miasm combined. So depending upon the symptoms, if an appropriate remedy is administered, we can definitely manage such cases successfully. For you, the common drugs you can read in the Materia Medica, since you have a habit of reading, you can go through drugs like astragalus mall, phosphorus, lolium, L-O-L-I-U-M, lolium temelentum. I repeat again, lolium temelentum is a rare drug. Very, very few people know about this lolium temelentum. Astragalus mall, phosphorus, lolium temelentum. Even we have got agaricus, zincum met, magnum aceticum. And moment we have got lower extremities, as the disease progresses, the lower extremities become not paralytic but paralytic-like. There's excessive weakness of the lower limbs. The patient is unable to get up. Or once the patient starts walking, he has to lurch. So you have got drugs like thallium and Lathiris. Now these need to be started in very low potency, like 6 or at the most 30, to be repeated daily. Or if you have got millisimal potency, 0/1, they're very well and good. And suppose if you are that is suffering from this. So symptomatically, astragalus is there. Phosphorus is a very deep acting drug, but can be used symptomatically in such conditions if the symptoms demand. Lolium is there. Agaricus is there in patients who lose their balance, gait, and even start losing their finer sensations. For example, the extrapyramidal sensations, what we call, they can't close or open up a button or a tie. Then they can't catch a spoon, or they have got tremors, or there's persistent backache throughout the back. So in such cases, agaricus is there. Zincum metallicum is very much there for, again, extrapyramidal system symptoms like tremors, jerks, mild mini convulsions, and then argentum nitricum is there, alumina is there. So a host of other these symptomatic drugs are there. But finally, tuberculum 200 can be used as intercurrent remedy because tuberculinum can be used as 200 or 1 m, both, or at the most sulfur. Both of these drugs definitely decrease the rate of relapses. And if the patient is already on steroids, many patients are put on steroids or immunoglobulins, then every possible care must be exercised to reduce the dosage until the homeopathic drugs take hold of the case. As a disease, the prognosis is guarded, but with proper homeopathic treatment, we have been able to show unbelievable results even in such cases. As of now, at least I've got 10 to 12 cases, all in US, of multiple sclerosis, and of them, barring 3, all are doing very well. I mean, much beyond my expectations. And normally I am a cardiologist, but then certain times I have to take up cases of multiple sclerosis when they come to me, and they are all overseas. Only 3 or 4 of them are Indians. Rest all are residents of US. So it's quite satisfying that we have reduced the steroids, we have curtailed the immunosuppressive therapies. So yes, homeopathy can do, if not cure such situations, at least prevent relapses or delay the relapses. And that with every relapse, the condition of the patient goes down. So that we can prevent. So please do study, again I repeat, a few drugs, astragalus, mol, phosphorus, it's a drug which you must have already done if you are reading homeopathy, lolium, agaricus musk, zincum metallicum, magnum aceticum, thallium, lathyrus, and oxytropis. Then we have got natrum uraticum, argentum natricum, and alumina. These are remedies which can be used symptomatically when the symptoms demand, and they really help. But they need to be used either in mother tincture form or at least lower potency, 6 or 30, because they maybe need to be repeated time and again. So, and suppose if you can take out your constitutional drug, that means your basic characteristics, then definitely the disease would take a pause, if not a stop.
So for diseases of this nature, a person really needs to be in constant communication with their physician so that it can be managed properly making any adjustments.
Exactly, because such diseases need to be managed. They cannot be cured or they cannot be only palliated. And we need, I mean, many times it requires a frequent change of prescriptions, because MS is such a tricky situation, such a tricky disease, that it does not always bring out the same symptoms in each attack. The symptoms of the past attack and the present attack would be totally different. It depends upon where the plaque has been formed in the brain or the spinal cord, and thereby the symptoms would manifest. And that is why the change of prescriptions. But the drugs which I have narrated earlier, they are used more often than the others. Of course, you have a host of other remedies, 3,000 remedies available. You can use any of them. But in our practice, we do have, luckily, MS patients. So that is why such drugs have been commonly used. And they really give a good palliation, a good relief, and a longer relief. And hopefully we are able to, in many patients, steroids definitely we have been able to curtail. And even immunosuppressive medications are curtailed to minimum or can be stopped. So as I told you, barring 3, all are 18, of the 18 patients, we are successful in managing the other patients very effectively with homeopathic medicines. But the primary medicine remains your constitutional drug if you can take it out. If you don't have a constitutional remedy, if it's not possible for you to consult a homeopath, then the only resort remains is drugs like tuberculinum or sulfur. But then I recommend that you take it after a homeopath prescribes that, not just because I'm telling you on this show.
Right, because it has to be prescribed for that individual, there, what we just talked about, the miasmatic history and that person's own way that they have come into the world. Also, you know, very often you talk about diet and other herbs and mother tinctures and other kinds of adjuvant
therapies,
right.
Yeah.
And so would you say that a different diet helps for these people with multiple sclerosis?
I don't think so. I mean, various diets have been. See, there are MS societies, multiple sclerosis societies, and they have been relentlessly working day in and day out. Like you have got Duchenne Muscular Dystrophy societies out in Europe and US. Even MS societies are there. and they have chalked out so many diets, they have tried to follow them, but they nothing concretely helps. They are just there to follow, but over a period of time, we have seen nothing helps actually. So you have to stay on with your whatever diet you're maintaining, accepting that you may decrease glutens in your diet, because Indians, as a culture, I can say, consume a lot of glutens in the form of chapatis or rotis, what we call. They are wheat-based pancakes. So we should restrict glutens. They add fuel to the fire.
Okay.
Other than that, I think everything else can be taken in moderation, of course. So it has to be a holistic approach. The medicine plays its part. The diet plays its part. The exercise, both mental and physical, play their part. So all in all, but yes, homeopathy does have a very positive outlook for all these MS patients.
I very often think about the oils when you talk about plaque buildup on the brain and the spinal cord, as if the body needs to be lubricated, and how important the correct oils are for the body to work properly.
Well, that in our center, we decided with blood group.
Okay. And we have an old show that you can look in the archives. We just discussed this whole one or two shows. We talked about the blood group. Okay.
Exactly, yeah. The next question is from Dr. Pravesh Agrawal from Palwal. Palwal is a place in the state of Haryana in India. And he says, sir, how can we explain the working of our homeopathic remedies in pathological states, since we have been made to understand that homeopathy acts only on functional planes? Very well. A very good question. Because just in the previous questions, we have talked about homeopathy not acting successfully. I mean, cure is basically to be guarded in a highly pathologically advanced case. So in this context, a very relevant question. Well, Pravesh, the action of all dynamic medicines are primarily on the vital force, which in disease states is corrupted by the miasmatic affection. That means miasm is also a force and vital force is also a force. When the miasmatic force, which is a stronger force, corrupts the vital force, then the person has got sickness. And when the sickness manifests in the form of symptoms, we call it as a disease and give it a name. So it is through this affection of vital force that a stronger, self-limiting artificial disease is created by the remedy administered. So if we administer a homeopathic remedy, it creates a self-limiting but a stronger artificial disease and abuts the miasm and thereby frees the vital force of the miasmatic process. So they are ultimately seen on the functional and structural planes, all the symptomatology. It is not on the structure per se that our medicines act directly, like the crude allopathic drugs. So the question of dynamic medicines working as such on the functional and or pathological states is not the question. However, in gross pathological states, which are the effect of the tertiary miasmatic state, that means when the miasm is continuously evolved or the vital force is continuously suppressed by the miasm, the dynamic medicines will act in proportion to the quantum of the reversibility which exists at that point of time. In an irreversible structural change, physiological doses of organ remedies, mother tinctures, they are used, which act on the physiological plane for palliating the secondary symptoms arising to the damage or the end result of the disease. So, all in all, yes, we have to assess, again, as I said, not all cases are curable, natural cases are curable. Miasmatic remedies, the greater the evolution of miasm, if it's a psoric miasm, that means only a functional plane, then it's a curative case. If it's a psychotic miasm, that's organic miasm, psychotic or syphilitic, pure psychotic or syphilitic, then becomes an incurable case, even with the use of antipsychotic or antisyphilitic remedies. Still, cure, basically, is very difficult. So, not all cases are curable. And as you wanted to know, that homeopathy acts only on functional planes and not on structural planes. So, again, as I told you, it is not the question of function and structure. It is the quantum of the miasmatic affliction of the vital force that is understood by symptoms as well as the pathology to be seen in concert, to be seen together. They cannot be seen separately.
Okay, did that answer that question for him? You're still here?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Oh, you
three
have
more,
questions. Oh, okay. You got a lot of communication. Thank you, Dr. Pravash from Praval, too, for that question.
Then we have got Dr. Sanjay Manwani from a small place, Durg, which is very close to Nagpur. And he says, is sacrum lactis a true vehicle? Has it been potentized? Please explain. Sacrum lactis, which we use as a placebo. He says, is sacrum lactis a true vehicle? Has it been potentized? Please explain, Dr. Adil. Well, Dr. Sanjay, yes, sacrum lactis, lactose or sugar of milk, has been potentized and is very useful in diuresis, amblyopia, cold pains, body pain because of cold season. And in the proving of sacrum lactis, there is a typical sensation called as, say, ice cold needles, which are there like agaricus. Ice cold needles are piercing the skin along with physical exhaustion. So sacrum lactis is a wonderful remedy for diabetes, peripheral neuropathy of diabetes, which we give very often as a remedy, homeopathic remedy, because it has got diuresis, it has got amblyopia, that is an eye complaint or a defective refractory power of the eye. Then diabetics very frequently complain of joint pains or even muscle pains due to slight cold. And they have a typical sensation in peripheral neuropathy as if ice cold needles are piercing the skin. Now, this sensation is also there in agaricus muscaris. And obviously, these diabetics at the end of the day have a fag or a great physical exhaustion. So sacrum lactis is this drug, and once potentized, this sugar of milk can be used as a homeopathic remedy. Sacrum officinal.
Is this not the natural blank pellets, or is this a different thing? You're talking about milk sugar?
Yeah, sugar of milk, lactose we are talking about.
Lactose. Okay, so are those the blank pellets that are used typically to put the drops of remedy
on? No.
This is different.
When they are blank, they do not have these, they do not conduct the proving. When they are potentized, only when they are potentized in alcohol, either not triturated, but they have to be potentized in alcohol, then you can have a potency of sacrum lactis. So sacrum lactis 30 if you give, and the proving it is conducted. I believe very few provers have undergone this proving, but still they have a very wide, this drug has been found widely used in diabetes proper.
Okay, that clarifies that, because I didn't want people to think that the blanks were
blank. It has to be potentized. We are talking about sacrum lactis in potency. Also, sacrum officinale. There's another drug called as sacrum officinale. What we were talking about initially was sacrum lactis, that is lactose. Now, sacrum officinale is called sucrose or cane sugar. And saccharin, they too have been potentized. So, but I don't remember the symptomatology of or the proving of those that sacrum officinale. But I know that the sacrum officinale has been proved. So, by definition, Sanjay, a true vehicle is a substance which should not have its own dynamic potential. We can use a particular substance as a vehicle in homeopathy if it qualifies that it does not have its own dynamic potential. However, we are still using this sacrum lactis or sacrum officinale as a vehicle for potentization. But this point can be widely debated, moreover, because the drug has been proved recently. And secondly, we are talking about proved remedy. We are not talking about blank pills. So blank pills still can be used as a vehicle safely, and we, from generations on, from Hahnemann onwards, till now, we have been using them safely.
Great.
The second last question is, respected sir, I want to know your opinion on vaccination. I have a baby girl. Should I get her vaccinated or not? Sir, please kindly give your valuable inputs. I am Dr. Rajesh from Visakhapatnam, Andhra Pradesh. Well, Dr. Rajesh, I don't know whether are you a homeopath or not, but I consider you to be a homeopath because you are asking me a question which is pertaining to homeopathy. Well, my opinion on vaccination. So I strongly agree that people should be vaccinated, but I also agree and I also exhort that they should be vaccinated with homeopathy. And I do not advocate as a homeopathic physician and as a person. I am a father. I have been a son to my parents, and I have not been vaccinated, at least allopathically. My father has not been vaccinated, and my children have not been vaccinated. I've got two children, one girl, 8 years, and my boy, 3.5 years. No, both are not vaccinated allopathically. But we all have taken a constitutional drug. I have taken my drug, my wife has taken her drug, my children have taken their drugs. So we have already given them their drugs very early in their, at least 1 year or 10 months or 11 months, I don't know the exact time, but we have given them their respective drugs. So basically, if I quote my family example, I don't, and still we all are very, very healthy. I'm 38 years old and I'm completely well. I've never been hospitalized or I don't know anything suffering from, touch wood, suffering from disease at all. So is with my father and my mother. So we all have been vaccinated with homeopathy. So vaccination is a must. And as a homeopath, we should vaccinate ourselves. And the vaccination is by administering the constitutional drug. Suppose if the constitutional drug is not possible, or example, you can't take out your own constitutional medicine, then you can take help of your colleagues. And still, if you're too shy for that, then you can administer a nosod which belongs to the family. For example, if there's a tuberculosis or tubercular-like disorders in a family, then you can take tuberculinum. Or if there's a lot of skin disorders in your family, you can take bacillinum or sulfur. Still, you will be vaccinated. If you have got malignancies, you can have carcinosin in your family. If you've got psychotic disorders, arthritis, joint pains, medirinum or thuja. And if you've got cirrhosis or degenerative disorders in your family, then you can have syphilinum or merksol. So all these are merksol, thuja and sulfur. They are not properly nosods, but given in such conditions, they act as nosodes. So they can be safely given and they act as vaccines. They would prevent the evolution of miasms, as well as the purpose for which any vaccination is given is served by homeopathic remedies as well. So all in all, my opinion on vaccination is it's must. You should be vaccinated. But as a homeopath, I would advocate homeopathic vaccination.
Okay, so you made a number of lists of miasms and remedies. I'm getting a feedback, so maybe turn off the browser. And we need that listeners know that a person needs to go to a healthcare worker to determine which of these are going to be the best ones for them. And because we have thousands of remedies, it's important to know this proper selection. But you were just giving examples of how people can be vaccinated homeopathically with tried and true remedies that have worked for our generations, hundreds of years, to alleviate to strengthen the vital force, to strengthen the immune system, to get through a full life without coming down with many diseases.
Exactly. I've given the example of my own family. Why anyone else? I mean, we are following. I believe practice what you preach. So I don't vaccinate. I have not given any vaccination to my children. I have not faced any problems in their schools or anywhere else. Even we have traveled abroad and all. So, I mean, it's totally your decision. But yes, vaccination should be done. Only thing is homeopathic vaccination should be done. That's as a homeopath and as a clinician, day in and day out, we see now lots and lots of patients suffering from bad effects of vaccination, which were initially not there, day in and day out. And unfortunately, in our times, there were only 3 vaccines, and today there are 17 vaccinations for an average Indian child. I don't know about the countries abroad, but an Indian child has to have 17 vaccinations. What's a sad situation? Such a small baby and so many pokes. So sad. And homeopathy, of course, only 2 or 3 doses, and that's your vaccinations are done.
And so we can remind people that tomorrow, Thursday at noon, Alan Phillips will be on talking about vaccinations and your rights. And we sometimes have physicians and other people giving information about medical news. Well, every week we do talk about current events and all of the situations that are going on with side effects and adverse effects from vaccinations. And people should be aware of that. And educate themselves. Did you have another question?
Last question. I did have three more, but I'm going to take on last question.
Okay.
And it is the question which you only sent me. That is via LinkedIn you had got. LinkedIn, one of the viewers had asked you a question and you had forwarded to me. So it was from Fiona Jennings. Am I spelling it correctly? Fiona or Fiona?
I'm not sure how she pronounces it, but either way will work.
Fiona Jennings. So her question was, looking for advice regarding a patient who I suspect has been damaged by side effects of beta blockers, can this be reversed? And the history goes, this young man, age 24, had migraine for which he took Migra Leave, OTC medicine, for 3 years until it got worse. His general practitioner then prescribed, firstly, pizotifen 0.5 milligrams, which he took for 2 weeks, causing massive fatigue. He was then put on propranolol, 20 milligrams for 9 months. For the readers, I should say that propranolol is a beta blocker. We'll come to it later. The question goes on. He is now complaining of muscle weakness and cramps, severe fatigue, memory loss, difficulty finding words at times, fuzzy thinking, dizziness, but no migraines. He's pretty obese, poor diet, but doesn't drink alcohol, coffee, illicit drugs, or fizzy drinks. His blood tests from the general practitioner have all come back as normal, and he has been referred to a consultant neurologist. Fiona says, I strongly suspect that this set of symptoms are a result of side effects of his medicines, most specifically the beta blocker. But I am open to other suggestions or comments. The big question though is, if this is so, can these side effects be reversed homeopathically, of course? A good question, Fiona. Let me tell you as well as the readers something about propranolol. Because propranolol is a very, very frequently prescribed drugs throughout the world in different forms. It's a sympatholytic. Now, we have got three types of nervous system. The central nervous system, we have the peripheral nervous system, and we have an autonomic nervous system. This autonomic nervous system consists of two parts, the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system. So, the sympathetic nervous system is responsible for loads of functions like the pumping of the heart, the constriction of the arteries, the constriction of the bronchi, and so many other functions. So it predominantly acts on the smooth muscles of the body. So propranolol is a sympatholytic, that means anti-sympathetic, but a non-selective beta blocker. Beta blocker, we have got alpha blocker, we have beta blocker. There are different selection of antihypertensive drugs. So propranolol is a bit older, but a sympatholytic, non-selective beta blocker. And these sympatholytics are used primarily to treat hypertension, anxiety, panic, and migraine, among other medical conditions. And propranolol is a highly lipophilic drug. Now, being lipo means lipids, and philic means love. So these propranolol, beta blocker, they love the lipids. Or in other sense, they are attracted, the molecules are attracted to lipids, and the lipids bind with them, and they are stored there. So propranolol is a highly lipophilic drug, achieving very high concentration in the brain, because brain contains lots of fat. The duration of action of a single oral dose of propranolol may be up to 12 hours. So I doubt that the case which you are talking about is suffering from side effects of beta blockers, because at the most a single dose can have the bad effects or effects of 12 hours or more. 12 hours or less. Now, certain people do experience certain side effects in these 12 hours. And the side effects can be unexplained skin rash, unexplained blisters or peeling of the skin. If the patient is very sensitive to propranolol, you can have wheezing, you can have difficult breathing or difficulty in swallowing. Many people experience chest pain. The moment they take propranolol, they have a vague chest pain throughout the chest, and they typically complain of constriction. The rubric which you are about to discuss, and constriction in the sternum. The rubric on page number 828, they have got constriction sternum. So this is a typical sensation experienced by people who are hypersensitive to propranolol. Then we have got unexplained swelling. swelling over below the lids, you can have swelling over the feet, or sudden weight gain. I mean, if the weight was, say, few X pounds, in a span period of 1 week or so, the weight increases to, very rapidly. Many people experience dizziness or lightheadedness or fainting spells in the first dose of propranolol. Then you can have cold or tingling or numbness sensation in the hands or feet, confusion, irregular heartbeat, slow heart rate. Even propranolol can initiate congestive heart failure. If a patient has got grave heart disease, that is heart attack, and if you start propranolol, if the patient is sensitive, then you may land up in heart failure. Then you can have a decrease in blood pressure from lying down or sitting down position to standing. You can have depression, hallucinations, vivid dreams. Many patients complain of various dreams. So you can see that if a patient is on propranolol, it definitely affects all the physical generals also. I mean, the dreams are one of the basic states of the person. Still, these drugs like propranolol is a simple drug in allopathy used to treat hypertension, and yet it can modify dreams. You can have vivid dreams, vivacious dreams, hallucinations, depression, even short-term memory loss, fatigue, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, constipation. And in many few people, it can initiate a disease called as systemic lupus erythematosus, SLE, which we call. It's a very, very common. In many patients, again, after 1 or 2 years of uses, it can cause impotence. So we have a host of side effects. So I don't know, I mean, so in your case, we may or may not have a propranolol or beta blocker induced disease, what in homeopathy we term as a drug miasm. So anyways, whatever the case may be, in my opinion, the symptoms are reversible. The patient, whosoever the patient is, the symptoms are reversible. So what I appeal to Fiona is, take a detailed history, collect all the symptoms, repertorize them, and administer the most similar remedy in ascending potencies, starting from 30C, and observe the results. I am very positive that in a few doses hardly, if the constitutional remedy is correct, then all these symptoms would slowly and gradually disappear, even if they are because of propranolol. Because I believe the propranolol has already been stopped. So first stop the drug, offending drug, and then collect the symptoms, and give the simulimum. In this case, we will call it a simulimum, not a true simulimum. But give the simulimum, let the symptoms subside, then give the true simulimum, that is original drug for this boy of 24 years, and then probably the symptoms would not relapse or the symptoms would decrease.
So, if the person is exhibiting all of these symptoms, they would have stopped their medication without having to slowly taper off of it?
No, immediately stop it. There is no point in tapering the dose. You have to stop it. Immediate.
Okay. This has been very educational, fascinating. We've learned a lot together. We encourage listeners to send in their questions so that we can do this again every week. And maybe we won't ever get back to our study of the rubrics, but I would love to do that. This is just as well and even more important that we reach out to people and let them know that there is somebody who has a couple of answers or at least will investigate answers for them. And we are on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio back on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Is there any other message that you want to send out before we end the show?
Well, the only message I want to send out is that if you really are interested in interested in homeopathy or exploring what homeopathy is, please visit my website www.homeoacad.org or .org. And do send me all these questions. I would love to answer them. I would really take pains in if I don't know answers to some, I would ask or refer to books and still get back to you. So please keep on asking questions. It's a whole lot of new experience. It's the show essentially is of cardiology and homeopathy, but then that's the name of the show. Ultimately, if it benefits the average listener, I think, and even my co-host thinks, that we are successful in this show.
We're definitely successful. We've had many hundreds of listeners. And Remember that there are archives. All of these shows are recorded. You can listen to them at your leisure while you're driving in your car, if you on your mobile device, on your computer, and you can share them also. So enjoy them. And we'll see you next Wednesday. And have an tonight, when you're not fasting during the day and it's late at night, now you can eat and get your body some nutrition, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, good. Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chinthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time.